How do bad assumptions lead to catastrophic conclusions? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy, and along with me is our Vice Chairman, Chuck Michaelis.
Hi, I'm glad to be with you, and I'm glad we're discussing bad assumptions because there's a lot of them out there.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, we've been talking, if you were with us yesterday, we were talking about a new piece of legislation that's been introduced in our Ohio State Senate by Senator Bill Coley, Senate Joint Resolution Number 2. SJR 2, as it would be known, is a resolution that would put Ohio on record as calling the Federal Congress of the United States to call an Article 5 Constitutional Convention for the purpose of amending the United States Constitution. However, as I said, wrong assumptions lead to catastrophic conclusions. And this piece of legislation, if you will, a resolution, it's only about 2 pages long, is filled with bad assumptions. That's the big problem. On the face of it, on the first page, basically it lays out some rationales, you know, that our country's in a mess, that we're more deeply in debt, and we're spending more than we're taking in, and that we need to take some steps to control our budget and eliminate our deficits. Okay, we all agree with that. I think everybody right, left, and center could agree with that, given what we see around us in the country. Then they move on, Senator Coley and his colleagues here, they move on to state that because Article 5 allows for states to request of Congress to call a convention to bring amendments that Congress on its own wouldn't pass. See, there are two. Now, Chuck, and this is why I'm glad Chuck's here today, because Chuck's our constitutional teacher, and he's really delved into this particular article of the U.S. Constitution deeply. And we'll try not to go so deep on you that it feels like you're drowning, because you can drown in all of the various twists and turns that go along with Article 5. But there are two methods for proposing amendments to the Constitution that our founders decided. And it's my understanding that this kind of was really a throwaway article. They really didn't take a whole lot of time discussing this, debating this. It was almost an afterthought that they threw this into the Constitution in the first place.
It's almost as if somebody said, you know, we really got to figure out a way to slip something in here so that if we have to call one of these again, one of these constitutional conventions again, there's a mechanism for doing it. Not a whole lot of work went into it. Honestly, if you read it, not a whole lot of thinking ahead went into it, because they did not foresee the fact that state sovereignty would be such a problem in the 21st century. Everybody assumed that state sovereignty would stay intact. There were those at the convention who wanted to eliminate state sovereignty, and unfortunately, they have, over the period of years, become the winners.
Now, you understand this because you studied the notes on the debates of the convention that were kept by Madison.
Not just Madison, but
a number of the men who were there at the convention. And, you know, you can find those books, ladies and gentlemen, if you go out and you Google the stuff up. If you're really interested in reading into this, you can find out that what Chuck found out was they really didn't spend a whole lot of time on this. This was something, first of all, I think I want to give kudos to our founders in one sense, because they realized they weren't perfect. They realized that this document wasn't divinely inspired and holy writ, and therefore, everything, once they closed the book after Article 4, that everything else was just perfectly fine. And so,
that's right.
And they, when they got down to the end of it, and actually there are 7 articles in the Constitution, but when they got down to the end of it, they realized that maybe we need to have some flexibility in case something comes up that we have to address that we didn't foresee.
That's right. And like we said last week, biblically based is not divinely inspired.
That's true. So we don't want to make that, don't want that to be confused. So what they did was they crafted this little article, and it allows for 2 mechanisms for amending the Constitution. One is amendments directly proposed by the Congress itself, the lawmaking body who has all the legislative authority granted in the Constitution through Article 1. The second, and this is what we talked about a little bit yesterday, is that the states themselves, through their legislatures, can make application to the Congress. And once two-thirds of the states, or 34 of the 50 states now, make an application to the Congress through the resolution process, which SJR 2 is part of that, then Congress is bound. They must call for a constitutional convention to discuss the requested amendments.
Well, actually, and therein lies the first bad assumption.
And I made it.
Yeah, well, you didn't really, but it's based on the language in the Constitution, and a lot of people make this the assumption that because of this language, which says, on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, the Congress shall call a convention for proposing amendments which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states or by the conventions in three-fourths thereof. Now, if you listen to that language very carefully, it makes it sound like you can call a convention and limit it to only discussing amendments.
That's what it, you know, facially, that's what it sounds like. Now, we talked about ratification there and what Chuck read, but we're going to talk about ratification a little bit later because that's the other ghost in the room right now when in dealing with this issue. But you're right. It sounds like it's talking about dealing with amendments. And ladies and gentlemen, historically speaking, after the first convention, which gave us the Constitution in 1787, we've never had another constitutional convention. We've never had one of these called since the first one. So we're really, when you're looking at historical precedent, what we must go back to is what happened during the first convention.
And that's right.
Chuck, I think you're going to unpack for people that what happened during the first convention shouldn't give us a lot of comfort level that any restrictions as to what amendments might be allowed to be heard in a new convention would be valid.
Well, essentially what happened was 11 of 12 attending states wrote quote unquote strongly worded resolutions that called for the amendment of the Articles of Confederation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because the Articles of Confederation, ladies and gentlemen, up and through 1787 were the governing documents of our country. After the Revolution, the Articles of Confederation were put together so that those 13 colonies could work together, trade together, do various things as a nation of sovereign states. That's why it was called Articles of Confederation. They were being confederate with each other, but holding on to their sovereign identities as each state.
Right, and the reason that Congress is called a Congress is because the Webster's 1828 dictionary definition of a Congress is a meeting of special deputies from sovereign states.
So, yes, that's something we've lost over the last couple of hundred years. But going back to Article 5, so right now, once those two-thirds of the states, and Ohio being one of them with SJR 2 setting out here, if Ohio passes SJR 2, it adds itself to the number. And when we reach 34 states have called,
34,
Congress is bound. The word is shall. It's not a permissive piece of language. It is a directive piece of language. Congress has no option other than to call for a convention.
Well, I think we need to cap off that point that for instance, the first constitutional convention was called for the purpose of amending the Articles of Confederation.
That's true.
There is absolutely no doubt about all the resolutions were very clear except for one, and I think that was New Hampshire, that what was supposed to happen was the Articles of Confederation was supposed to be amended, and everybody thought the part that was going to be amended was the Interstate Commerce Clause.
Which was the problem at the time.
Yeah, the Articles didn't have one.
That was the crisis of the day. Just like today, SJR 2 is stating that the crisis is our budgets are out of balance and we've got excess spending and runaway deficits. So going back to that original, so once that was called and it was brought together, and that constitutional convention was put forth, what happened?
Well, the very first act of the constitutional convention was to vote to operate in secret.
Okay. And they didn't want snooty reporters going out there trying to spin what they were doing ahead of time.
And that's essentially it. They didn't want word to get out what they were doing. But the second thing they did was they voted on a series of resolutions that said, okay, the Articles of Confederation is dead.
Okay, but wait a minute. The Articles of Confederation was the governing document. Is that correct?
Yes. That was the current operating highest law of the land.
And so when they got in there, they started voting. And what they basically did was they killed the Articles of Confederation.
They voted to chuck the Articles of Confederation as the governing document of the United States.
Well, was that part of the New Hampshire resolution? Is that the reason why you said it was a little different than the others?
Well, New Hampshire's basically gave their delegates a kind of a free hand.
Well, I guess they must have taken it.
They took a real free hand.
And they really influenced a lot of other delegates. Because if it's my remembrance, because I've seen some of those original resolutions, they were very specific in saying, you can only discuss these issues and no others.
At least four states. Maryland being having probably the strongest worded resolution saying, amendments regarding certain things and not others, and the exact certain things kind of slipped my mind, but we'll look that up.
Well, and you know, if anybody wants to give us a call or drop us an email at principledpolicy.com.
We've written documents to have it all laid out, so
that's right.
Look on our website.
Well, the reason why I bring that up, Chuck, is because it sounds very familiar, because as I'm looking at Senate Joint Resolution 2 here, the Ohio Constitutional Convention call document, it basically says here, as a resolved, you know, big capital letters, resolved. It means it's firm. We're firm on this. As a state legislature, we're firm on this. Resolved that if the convention called by the Congress is not limited in subject to the amendment proposed in this resolution, i.e., and we talked about that yesterday, there's three parts to it. Basically, a balanced budget, a line item veto, and every 2-year budgeting instead of annual budgeting. So if it's not limited to that subject that's proposed in this resolution in SJR 2, any delegates, representatives, or participants from the state of Ohio asked to participate in the convention are permitted to debate and vote only on the proposed amendment contained within this resolution or an equivalent amendment. Sounds to me like our state senators are thinking, okay, well, we're going to lock them down. Didn't the state legislatures back during the 1787 period think that that's what they were doing too?
Exactly. That's exactly what they thought they were doing. And it's because there were a whole lot of people who don't understand the basic nature of a convention on a national level.
And we're going to talk about that more in detail tomorrow. But what I want to get to today, because I think we're kind of getting close to the end of our time here, is the fact that this portion of SJR 2 that says we're going to bind the delegates, they don't have any basis in Article 5 to stand on this claim. There's nothing in Article 5 that says that the state legislature, number one, will even be allowed to pick the delegates, and number two, if so picked, that doesn't say whether they would be allowed or not allowed to just direct the delegates how they are to vote.
Oh, that's absolutely correct. There is absolutely no reason to believe that the states will even be allowed to choose delegates.
And I think maybe subconsciously, Senator Coley understands this, because he said any delegates, representatives, or participants that are asked to participate in the convention. So under this portion of the resolution, he's assuming that Congress is going to then be making the call, and those are going to be, or maybe he's saying that the state legislature is asking, because maybe he's assuming too much that the legislature, because they issued the request to Congress, then that binds Congress to force them to allow the states to pick their delegates.
No such binding.
It's not in there.
It ain't in there.
Just as he said, like ragu and the other sauces. It isn't in
there.
That's
right. Where's the beef?
It isn't in there.
That's right. And the fact is, because it's not in there and it's not specifically laid out, under the current political atmosphere, it defaults to the federal government.
Okay. And ladies and gentlemen, we're probably going to have to wrap up here. But the point is, we're getting to an interesting concept. And that is, when we're dealing with the Constitution, silence does not equal assent. Just because if the Constitution is silent to a provision, doesn't mean that you can assume that you're allowed to do it. This is all for today. Stay with us tomorrow as we talk more about this important issue on Principles and Policies.
Tune in tomorrow. We look forward to seeing you.